It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
Well, 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 Bruce Weber lands a transfer that, I'll be honest, is of a higher caliber than I anticipated K-State landing. Doesn't solve all the problems. I don't think it makes K-State an NCAA tournament team today, but it's a nice step. And that is Mark Smith, who transfers from Missouri, has also played at Illinois. Welcome into The Game. John Kurtz, Mitch Fortner with you here. You can tweet us at The Game KMAN. You can tweet me at JL Kurtz. Tweet Mitch at Mitch the Fort. Busy show. We, of course, have to coronate Scott Drew, the great Scott Drew, making the Final Four last night. Congratulations to him. A lot of people with egg on their face today about that. And don't you think that I'm letting you off the hook as far as that goes. My buddy Carrington Harrison will join the show in hour two at 5:25. He does a sports talk show in 610 Sports in Kansas City. He is a big Mizzou fan, very connected on Mizzou fronts, and he has a lot of insight to lend on Mark Smith, K-State's new transfer, who you can basically look like is a grad transfer because this is somebody that's played 4 years of college basketball and is, in essence, been a starter for 4 years in college basketball. He started 19 games, rather, as a freshman for Brad Underwood at Illinois. So you go back to early in his career, like, this is a kid that's played a lot of basketball and a lot of college hoops. The reason that I say this is better than anybody I thought K-State would land is because, I mean, most of the time, look, you're always taking a chance on who it is that you're getting out of the portal. But this is a four-year starter that's averaged 10 points per game and does have a 45% three-point shooting season under his belt with over 100 attempts. That's pretty good as far as not just in a vacuum, like getting a player of that ilk and of that caliber to your team, but also trying to knock off what K-State needs on their checklist. Let's go back to what Fran Fraschilla said that K-State really needed. It was late in the basketball season. I don't remember specifically when it was, but fairly late in the hoop season. Fran told Kellis that K-State needed to get older, they needed experience, and they needed shooting. Well, this is about as good as you can do, realistically, in trying to check off a couple of those boxes. Especially if you view this as a DeJuan Gordon replacement. Mark Smith is a guard, but like a 6'5 wing. You know, wing is probably the better way to phrase it. 6'5 wing. Here's somebody with 4 years of starting experience in college basketball as opposed to two for DeJuan Gordon. So the experience box is absolutely checked. I mean, there's not much more to say other than that. And then shooting. Look, guys that are out there that have consistently shot almost 40% from three throughout an entire career, they're going to be at the top of a lot of people's transfer lists. That's going to be really difficult to land. If you can get somebody that's done that for a season, which was the sophomore season for Mark Smith, 45% from three on just over 100 attempts, pretty good. Pretty good. Now, he's flawed. He's not perfect. The numbers really dipped toward the end of his Mizzou career, and his worst year statistically at Mizzou was last year. Still right about 10 points per game, but the three-point shooting dropped to 32%, and he was under 40% from the field. Those aren't great numbers for a guard. You'd like to see that beefed up some. But still, 32% from three is better than the 29% that K-State shot as a team from beyond the arc, and we've still seen that before from Smith in his career. This is also somebody K-State's very, very familiar with because coming out of high school, this was a recruitment I can very, very well remember following. Four-star recruit, really good recruiting pedigree. K-State wanted him bad and did a pretty good job, got close in the process, didn't land him. And then he transfers after a year from Illinois, and it sounded like K-State was in on him again, didn't land him. But they've known him for a long time. There's been a relationship there for a long time, and it felt like, in some ways, this was a long time coming. So to me, that also can alleviate at least some of the concern about bringing a player like him in via the portal. Like, you at least have a pretty good understanding of who this kid is. So not as much upside here, perhaps, as somebody from a smaller level, somebody that's been a small conference like player of the year, just torn it up there, and now you want to see how that translates here. because you've seen what Mark Smith is as a Power 5 player, flaws and all. But as far as needing somebody that can shoot it a little bit, needing somebody that has some experience, you know what you're getting in Smith. And I will say, touche. All right, touche. Still a lot of work to be done, but as a first step here, touche to Bruce Weber and staff for landing Smith.
His Wikipedia page has already been changed over to playing for K-State. Some purple right below his name. He says now a college basketball player for the Kansas State Wildcats. So somebody's already on top of that Wikipedia page. All right, so I've had time to digest this pickup for K-State when I saw the news at about 6 in the morning.
Well, I would hope that you were doing more research than just reading his Wikipedia page.
Oh, no. I've been kind of looking at his stuff all day long. However, I will say Missouri has already deleted his profile from their athletic website. So if you want to go over to look at that, you're not going to find it. You're going to have to look at Wikipedia to go look at numbers now if you want.
Or ESPN or collegestats.com. I mean, there's...
Well, okay. Okay, you're right. I just like going to the college's website.
We digress. What do you think about Mark Smith?
Anyway, I'm used to going to the websites because, you know, soccer. You're not going to find that on ESPN. Anyway, what I don't like about him is what you said earlier, his dropping numbers. His sophomore year at Missouri, he was a great three-point shooter, 44%. But fast forward to this past season, 31.5%. I don't like the declining numbers, especially with he doesn't do a whole lot but shoot the basketball. He likes to get ready for the catch-and-shoot three-pointer. He's not much of a driver. He made 43s last year. That was half of his field goals. So most likely he's going to shoot jumpers for K-State. And when it comes to, there's been the comparison, he's kind of replacing Dejuan Gordon. Well, Dejuan Gordon did a lot for K-State. He was grabbing steals. He was forcing turnovers. But most importantly, he was grabbing rebounds. He was grabbing a ton of rebounds. Well, Mark Smith is not a rebounder. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. But he doesn't turn the ball over that much. I guess you can consider that a big plus as well. Because K-State, I mean, who didn't turn the ball over a lot for K-State last year?
Well, I like what you brought up. I mean, It's a fair criticism. He does not drive to the basket. He's not somebody that can do much off the bounce. He is a spot-up shooter. K-State already has Mike McGurl and Nigel Pack in the backcourt who are basically spot-up shooters. I mean, how often was it that Pack was getting to the rack and scoring? Not often. McGurl, not really all that often. They're spot-up shooters. You're adding another one of those guys here. He does not do all the extra little things that Dejuan Gordon does. Very different player than Dejuan. Not nearly as athletic. A pretty good shooter and wants to shoot the ball at a high volume rate. Dejuan, like the total opposite. Great athlete who wants to do everything else. These are very, very different players. But I'm okay with taking a chance on somebody like this and doing it this way. I mean, look, Dejuan's already gone. They obviously would have kept Dejuan if they could have helped it. But in this scenario, take somebody that can shoot the ball. This feels like listening to me and what I was clamoring for the entire year, like, you guys, yes, you got better defensively and are a pretty good defensive team by the end of the year. We know that the coaching staff can coach defense. What we don't know is that they can recruit enough dudes who can put the ball in the basket. Enough dudes that can shoot. And Smith has at least shown that he has that capability at this level at a pretty high volume. So, while that is a sacrifice, to me it's a sacrifice worth making. I don't think this is a move that you can really criticize. I'm fine if you say, hey, this doesn't move the needle for me a whole lot on what next season is going to be. That's a whole other conversation. Like how far this team really has to go, how much trust do you have in the coaching staff, no matter who it is that's there. All fair questions and a fair point. But I don't think it's possible to really look at this and say, a bad move. Shouldn't take this kid. No, absolutely. Like anybody who complained about them not scoring the ball and not shooting the ball, like this is an offensive-based move. Instead of taking another Dejuan, somebody that can fill up the stat sheet and be athletic and defend and whatnot, no, they took somebody who can shoot and has offensive upside and something that they just don't have a whole lot of, which is guys who have proven that they can shoot better than 27-28% from three-point range here. So that's the pushback from me on that front. Fair criticism, I just like that they're going this route. I think they knew that they had to. You could not be like historically bad offensively again next year.
Well, and Mark Smith, he has shown through the past that he can be a hot shooter. Like, there's two or three nights in a row, he'll go out there and he'll score double digits for you. He could get up to 20 points. He had great games earlier this year against a great game against Oregon earlier this year. Played really well against Wichita State earlier in the year as well. But there's times as well he gets pretty quiet. Like he has a stretch of two or three games where he's not hitting shots. So he's hot at times, but he can also be pretty cold at times. I think my favorite part about Mark Smith, though, is his experience. He has played 100 games at the Power 5 level for either Illinois or Missouri. But the downside of that, it's mostly been with losing teams. This last year with Missouri was the first time he was on a team that was above 500.
Didn't Mizzou make the – I mean, they've made the tournament in the last 3 years. That can't be the case.
They've had losing – no, I'm serious. They've had losing years other than this last year, the last couple of years.
Okay. All right. So, they made the tournament this year, I guess, is
right.
What I'm thinking of. So, the part of this, too, is that you hold that up, the experience and the shooting numbers and some of the proven things that he has put out there. You hold that up compared to like what K-State would typically be filling a scholarship with at this point, and that's either a transfer, which Justin Edwards was decent enough on paper and turned into, honestly, like a player in some respects fairly similar to what Smith is right now on paper by the time he was done in his college career. So maybe it's another one of those. But outside of that, we're talking Mato Sala if you're trying to go get a transfer, or you know, all these junior college players like David Sloan, Stephen Hurt, Austin Trice, guys that just never really worked out, or just a spring high school signee where we're talking about the Brian Patrick, Ron Freeman's, Good News Capagels of the world. Also guys that you would not take right now. So out of all those names that I just rattled off there, like this is better. This is objectively better than what you would typically be pulling in here at this point. So by a lot of different metrics, this is a move that I think you should look at and applaud. It doesn't mean that it's going to fix everything, and it doesn't mean that this team is going to the tournament. And we are going to talk more about that throughout the show, as well as speaking of the tournament. Gene Taylor's response to my question yesterday about is that the legitimate expectation for the program right now for next year is that it has to be NCAA tournament or bust. But we have to salute my guy. So many of you haters out there, I hope you enjoyed it and soaked it all in last night. We'll do that coming up next.
Game on. Tweet.
Scott Drew is off to the Final Four. I, for one, am very happy for the guy. It's crazy that it's taken this long for his coaching job to be validated here. And I say validated, like, at least recognized in the esteem that it should be. Like, I just did a little experiment and Googled Scott Drew's name and pulled up the newest results on the Google search. And it's like, a lot of these articles do reference that, like, Scott Drew finally has his validation. And they have this same tone that like, hey, he made it to a Final Four now. Now we can look back on what it is that he inherited at Baylor and say like, damn, what a job that he did turning that around. Turning that complete and utter mess around. But it should not have taken that at all. And K-State fans should know that better than anybody. Because like there are more similarities between Drew and Snyder than people would like to admit. And I say that because I don't think very many people like Scott Drew. And I understand why you wouldn't like Baylor. Don't understand it as much with Drew. But Bill Snyder always gets this knock against him where like a lot of people won't recognize the coaching job quite for what it is because he didn't win a national championship. Because he didn't actually stack enough tangibly in the trophy case at the end of the day. But we all know that's dumb. That shouldn't change the job that he did in taking the program from where it was to where it now is and where it was at its peak. He took it from a complete wreck, the worst Division I college football program that was out there, and 5 years later had it in a bowl game. At one point, won 11 games in 6 of 7 seasons. It's insane. Won a couple of conference championships. I mean, Baylor... We've detailed this and detailed it recently, but they hadn't been to a Final Four since the 50s. It was a below average program historically at best and a terrible program historically at worst when Drew took it over. And oh, by the way, he took it over in the midst of the greatest scandal really that college basketball has ever seen. 7 years after taking that program over, not being able to play a full legitimate schedule when he first took over, not getting a non-conference schedule, having to go 3 full years with scholarship restrictions at the beginning of his tenure there. 7 years, he has them in a regional final. He has them in an Elite Eight. He goes back a couple of years later. He goes back to another one last night. That's after his team last year was absolutely a Final Four national championship contender and the season and the tournament gets wiped out because of COVID. Like, he put together a turnaround job that rivals Snyder. And you would think that more K-State fans would be looking around being like, yeah, we know how frustrating that is when our guy doesn't get his due just because he doesn't have that big shiny thing at the end there. Which for Snyder was the national championship, college basketball, the Final Four expands enough that that becomes really the thing as opposed to just purely a national championship. I don't understand why then it took so many people so long to come around here. Because when I first started using this, I mean, this has been an evergreen take for me for years here on the show that, like, Scott Drew is actually a great coach. Like, why do people think that he's not a good coach? Like, 5 years ago, that was a hot take. It's not anymore. I don't hardly ever get any pushback on it anymore. When I throw out tweets like I did last night, I don't get much pushback on it anymore. But 5 years ago, that was a hot take to say that Scott Drew was legitimately a great coach. Turnaround job was still the same. Still had gone to 2 Elite Eights at that point in time, but nobody really recognized it and respected it until he comes in with just an ass-kicking machine the last 2 years, in particular this year. So, look, if you guys would like to apologize, you can tweet me at J.L. Kurtz. You can call the show at 537-1350. If you need to give your apology to Scott Drew, you are more than welcome to do so here today. I completely welcome it with arms wide open. Mitch, I don't know if you'd like to, but...
Apologize for what? I've never... Are you accusing me of something?
I don't know. I don't know how you really have felt about
it. I mean, congratulations. In his 18th year, he made a Final Four. Finally. Good job. Proud of you.
But you don't feel anything toward Drew not getting the respect that he's deserved before this point in time.
I mean, I think he's getting plenty of respect right now.
He is, again, though, in his, what, 18th year?
It's not my problem.
Finally? Like, it's dumb, though. Like, it's very dumb because...
I mean, that's college sports. He's not coaching at Texas. He's not coaching at Michigan. He's not at North Carolina. He's not at Duke. He's not at KU. He's not at Kentucky. All right? So if you're outside of those schools, yeah, I think you got to earn it a little bit. And at Baylor and being Scott Drew, he had to earn it a little bit more.
But as a K-State fan, you should be on the side of the little guy. That should make you angry that it's that way, because that's what the Cats have been fighting since the beginning of time. That's especially with since the beginning of Snyder, which, you know, to be honest, around here really is the beginning of time. Since the beginning of Snyder, that's always been the uphill battle that's been fought. Is that fight for respect? Because yes, you are in a smaller place. You are not one of the big boys. You are K-State. Baylor's the same way. Same way. Drew's been fighting the same thing. Does it with a smile on his face the whole time, too. I'm happy for the guy, and I think it's about time that people... I'm enjoying soaking this all up, and I'm puzzled as to why, in my world, which is K-State Twitter and anybody that I'm around with in Manhattan or Kansas City, whoever it is that has K-State ties, like, there just has not been more of a push for this and a feeling of solidarity. Really, that's what it is. It should be a feeling of solidarity with Drew.
Listen, I respect Scott Drew. I just have a hard time going as far as you do because I think it's because it's Baylor. Just the past history with Baylor, it's hard not to loop in all of Baylor sports with it. I mean, you got Kim Mulkey just absolutely speaking from the cuckoo's nest yesterday. And, I mean, to bring up Art Briles, just some bad history at Baylor. I do not have any positive feelings towards Baylor. Their campus is all right. I think their football stadium is bland. And the top of the Farrell Center needs a paint job. Scott Drew is just, to me, another good coach that made it to a Final Four.
Bill Snyder, just another good coach? Because, like, the resumes are very, very similar. Like, good programs, good to very good programs that had achieved some really impressive things off of arguably the most impressive turnaround in their respective sports, in college football and college basketball, but always falling short of the real ultimate accomplishment, either the Final Four or a national championship in Snyder's case. Remarkably similar resumes. So I would insinuate to you that if you're going to make that jump with Drew, you're really doing the same thing to Snyder, if we're going to be fair and apply those same sticking points to everybody else throughout coaching.
Well, first of all, Bill Snyder did it first. All right, it's easier to honor the guy who did it first rather than the guy that did it second or third or fourth. You know, I'm sure there's other arguments out there for other guys that made some impressive turnarounds at their program that was crap before and turned them into champions. But it's hard to take sides of especially a rival. I respect Baylor's run. I'm not rooting for them. I honestly don't really want them to win. It's not because I'm bitter or anything, but Bill Snyder coached at K-State, and he is crowned pretty respectively across the country as the guy that with the greatest turnaround in college football history. Okay, Scott Drew can have the greatest turnaround in college basketball history. I don't have a problem with that.
It seemed like your whole argument there for a while was that South Park episode where it's just Simpsons did it the whole time. Simpsons did it. Like Snyder did it. Snyder did it.
Snyder did it. And you know what? You could say Snyder went to a Final Four after 10 years, okay? Because that 98 Big 12 championship game, you win that, you're playing for a national championship.
Doesn't quite hold up the same, and I understand that that in some ways is unfair, but it doesn't quite hold up the same.
Well, you know, Scott Drew got to take a couple of vacations during this year because his team couldn't get their COVID situation together twice.
Well, to me, that makes the coaching job this year all the more impressive.
Everybody's playing a full Big 12 schedule, and they get away with not having to play the whole thing.
Made it tougher to get it back around and going in time to make the Final Four, man. Cheers to you, Scott.
Maybe take COVID more seriously.
Cheers to you. How close is K-State to being a tournament team now that they have Mark Smith, the transfer from Mizzou? I'll answer that question for you next. Here, Kellis has an article up now with Mark Smith quotes. New transfer that K-State has landed from Mizzou. Played a year at Illinois, 3 at Mizzou. 10 points per game over his career. 35% from three-point range for his career. That's been all over the board. He had a 45% season. He had a 31% season this past year. There's good and bad there, but I think based on what we could reasonably expect, it's about as good of a pull as I would have anticipated. Better, frankly, than I would have anticipated for the staff getting out of the portal. But the question becomes, like, what does that mean for getting back to the tournament? Like, okay, that's all well and good, but is this team going back to the tournament next year? Right now we're in the throes of March Madness. It's a lot of fun to watch, and it makes you really miss that your team is not there. I would say that I don't think right now this makes K-State a tournament team, certainly, just by adding Smith. I don't know that there was a realistic, like, one transfer option that was going to be out there that K-State would realistically have a shot at that would come in and you'd be like, all right, bam, this is a tournament team now. Because think about, you know, as improved as they were at the end of the year last year, this was still a 4-win Big 12 team. We're still talking about, you know, making a considerable jump there up by 4 or 5 league wins and maybe another 1 or 2 non-conference wins to being a bona fide tournament team. It's a lot of work to do. It's going to take a lot of different things. Transfer portal being a huge part of it, but especially after you had lost Dejuan, that road got tougher to hoe. So I don't think this alone does it. I think it will take a little bit of everything. And honestly, the more I think about it, the more the biggest jump will have to come from just the three freshmen, as opposed to what you supplement them with in the portal. You know, what Logan Landers, who will be a freshman incoming next year, will be. Like, the biggest thing that you need is just for Nigel Pack to really be a star. And Damian Bradford to continue to be a stud inside, and for Selton Miguel to actually develop a semblance of an offensive game. Those will be the real keys here. But that should take nothing away from what this signing is, because in order to get to that point, you were also going to have to supplement with other players. You were going to have to supplement with guys from the transfer portal. And this is as good a get as I think you could realistically expect. I would just put it this way. Like, you are in the portal, always going to be taking a chance in some respect. There will always be a flaw with somebody's game. Outside of maybe there are a couple at the very, very top of the over 1,000 players in the portal that you would say, can't miss, this is a guy that needs a different situation for whatever reason, and everybody in the country will line up trying to grab him. But outside of that, it's either going to be, hey, there's a character concern. Hey, why did this guy actually want to leave this school? Like the Little Rock kid that K-State's in on, like, why is his coach bad-mouthing him for opting out? Or it's, well, he did it at a lower level, but can he actually hack it at a bigger level? Like, there's always going to be some flaw. There will always be some flaw. And so you pick and choose your flaws the best that you can, and how does that match up with the strengths that this guy has? And you go from there. And I think the equation on that has been done pretty well by K-State here. Somebody with experience, somebody that you are familiar with, because Smith backs up in this Kellis article. K-State was a finalist when he went to Illinois. K-State was right in there when he transferred from Illinois, and he has a great relationship with the staff. You know this guy, he's experienced, and he does have a past of being a really good shooter. And if there's one thing that this team needed abundantly, more than anything else, it was somebody who can shoot. And yes, it would be awesome. Awesome if you had somebody that had shot 40% from three-point range 3 or 4 years in college and were in the portal and he were coming to K-State. That would be great. But guess what? A lot of other teams need three-point shooting too. And a lot of other teams like the fact that there are 40% three-point shooters out there, and that would be something that's very, very difficult to pull in. So, that's really where I'm at. I think there are legitimate reasons to be concerned about what the backcourt looks like in having a lack of variety. You have really three spot-up shooters right now. I think that will have to be fleshed out and figured out, and we'll see if the Little Rock kid comes in, if that is something that changes that and gives you somebody who adds that skill set. There's a lot to be sorted out. Don't think they're a tournament team now. Do think that it at least is a step in the right direction. So I'm not going to go total homer, like, man, I'm over the moon about this. But I do have an eyebrow raised. I am surprised. And I think it at least has them on a path to where you can start to talk about, okay, can you put yourself at least in the conversation to be on the bubble? That's a lot of qualifiers, but that represents how far away that team has been, frankly, the last 2 years to being in the tourney.
I think the staff is showing us that they're putting their necks out there and trying to get these better players. For instance, Mark Smith, he's a former four-star recruit. They're getting these guys that coming out of high school was a big deal, and they've proven at the Power 5 level that they're going to play a lot of minutes, they're going to score the basketball, and they're going to make your program a little bit better. I think certainly Mark Smith is going to, hopefully, I have fingers crossed, that he comes in and makes a difference. I do have my concerns, no doubt about that. But right now my trust with the program, you're not going to get it back altogether with great recruiting. It's going to help, but you got to earn my trust back in a way, and I'm not speaking for the whole K-State fan base, just kind of feeling about myself that there was some trust loss in the last couple of years. Gaining some back at the end of the year, it's going to help a little bit. But right now, a couple of recruits, it's going to get my attention, but you got to show me with some wins and losses. You got to show that these guys coming in can play well, they have chemistry with the guys that are already on the roster, and that they can work together as a unit.
Well, I completely agree with you on that. And that lack of trust is a big part of why I'm very cautious in saying this, that, like, well, I am impressed and surprised, which would display the lack of trust in and of itself. I'm also not ready to anoint them right now as a tournament team just because of this. Like, for instance, you know, and this will be the type of thing that's it's going to get out there. It's going to be in this Kellis article. I'm sure people will see it. And the anti-Bruce Weber hive will be all over it. But Mark Smith has a quote in here where he says, Coach Weber was telling me he thinks that we can make a run for a conference championship. Now, you know, yeah, you lost my trust on that front. Yes,
why not?
Yes, there was a conference title 2 years ago. But you lost my trust on that front. So I'm definitely not buying in on that talk. And I'm still not buying in on, like, hey, you guys are a tournament team right now.
Texas and Oklahoma, they're going to have new coaches. Mike Boynton's going to be all cocky next year. Who knows where KU's going to be. Baylor's going to probably lose a bunch of guys at the NBA.
Kansas will be in jail.
If I haven't convinced you in the last 20 seconds, then sorry, Mark Smith, I tried.
Yeah, I also feel like this is the kind of quote where, I mean, people were upset about a quote that was in in an article from K-State Online about Bruce Weber had told a kid, like, hey, we're a good spot for you, but go do some research and come back and tell me what you think. And it's like, oh, well, he said, go do some research. What kind of crap recruiting is that? Now he's going to say, hey, we can make a run for a conference championship, trying to sell a kid on, like, hey, coming here. And it worked. And now you'll have the anti-Bruce Weber hive. The same people will be like, oh, what a ridiculous statement that is, this guy. And it's like, okay, you know. I'm somewhere in between, which I think is the right place to be on this right now as it relates to the program and as it relates to specifically and particularly Mark Smith here today. We'll find out more on Mark Smith from Carrington Harrison, my good friend from 610 Sports in Kansas City. He's a Mizzou fan, very connected with the Mizzou program, and watched Smith over the last 3 years. He'll join the show at 525. Mitch, though, has the number one song of the day coming up next.
Two girls for it.
Somebody who's grown up right around the Kansas Ocean his entire life, this song really gets me fired up to head to the beach.
See,
puts me in the mood.
I was thinking about that today, as a matter of fact. So, first of all, this is not the Beach Boys, which a lot of people think it is. It's Jan and Dean. Surf City, 2 weeks at number one. Was surf music
what
Beach
year?
Boys? 62. I'm sorry, 63. Was this kind of music popular around here? Like, I can
see
it being
me?
Fun. Yeah, like, not necessarily you, but I'm just kind of I'm asking the audience.
I can't tell you about 1962.
Well, you know, this is from the early 60s. Believe it or not, Jan and Dean were pioneers of the California sound and vocal surf music styles that was popularized as well by the Beach Boys. Now, according to rock critic Dave Marsh, he's been writing for a long time, Jan and Dean are also credited for being influential in punk rock. It's because they're big goofballs on stage and they're anti-music establishment. So, for instance, this was in the 70s. Jan and Dean kind of evolved into a psychedelic rock band. Well, they were performing in 1973, and the promoter wanted them to lip sync. Well, they weren't really wanting to do that. So instead, halfway through the track, they just stopped singing. They started dancing around being goofy, but they stopped singing. And the crowd lost it. They booed them off stage. They hated it. So that was the way of sticking it to the promoter of that show. They were together until 2004 when Jan passed away due to a seizure.
What are these dudes' names?
Jan and Dean. J-A-N and then D-E-A-N.
Passed away from a seizure. Like just a random seizure?
Yeah.
Seizure's taking somebody out?
I guess so. This was released on their fourth studio album, Surf City and Other Swinging Cities.
Well, I like that, honestly. I mean,
I didn't see Kansas City listed.
You have me enthralled with these guys right now. I respect the punk rock part of this. Why don't you play it again?
So Jan from the group wrote this song with Brian Wilson. Brian Wilson is from the Beach Boys. It was about the fictitious surf spot where they go, where there's two girls for every boy. Now, quick story about that. When I was in junior high, one of our warm-ups sometimes would just be running through this medley of...
I'm intrigued about where the story's going when it starts like that.
Well, in choir, we would just run through a medley of Beach Boy and Jan and Dean songs. And we hear the song start, Two Girls for Every Boy, we're like, oh, where's this party at? But, you know, we're immature and, you know where our minds go at that point.
I'm 31. That's where my mind went.
Oh, that's fair. Now, the Beach Boys manager, which was the Wilsons' dad, Murray, he was very upset that his son helped write this song because they thought they were wasting a number one song on another group, which is exactly what they did. It was a number one hit. Beach Boys, actually, they got their first hit a year later. Their first number one a year later with I Get Around in 1964. And in my final fact here, in 1991, after moving to Huntington Beach, California, Dean from the group helped convince elected officials that they needed to change the town slogan to Surf City, USA. Well, in 2006, they did exactly that. Huntington Beach, California became Surf City, USA. I've been there, USA. I've been there. There's hardly any waves. Very lame surf scene.
At Huntington Beach?
Yeah.
Well, I've definitely been there too, but I mean, I was not paying attention to any of the waves or anything like that.
What were you looking at?
I don't know. But I'm not. Surfing never crossed my mind.
You didn't put your feet in the water?
Oh, I'm sure I did. I'm sure I was out in the water, but I'm not.
Getting those knee-high waves?
I'm not thinking about, like, man, the squall looks great today. I don't. Is that a surf term? I just get that right, squall.
I'm from Kansas, just like you.
I think that's a surf term. Nailed it. Sudden violent gust of wind, especially one. Well, maybe that's not.
To add on to the Surf City slogan, 65 businesses in Huntington Beach, California now have Surf City in their name.
Really? Well, that's kind of dumb. I mean, you know, you can't just take that for everything.
Trying to make some money, John.
Somebody needs to be... Well, okay. I guess I can respect the hustle, especially out in Cali where, you know, that's a real battle. But, like, just let's... Can we stick to maybe, like, five... Like, cap it at five surf cities? Let's just put...
Surf City Coffee.
Put the foot down after that.
Surf City Records. I'd imagine there's a record store around there.
I'm sure there's everything. Maybe
Surf City Bistro.
Maybe not. Maybe we can just go start our own version of Surf City.
Surf City Radio. Everybody talks like, hey, dude, let's go surfing.
Surf City Radio, exactly. Cowabunga, dude.
There you go.
Cowabunga, dude.
West Coast John is back.
West Coast John. Jay Taylor won't publicly say the NCAA tournament's the expectation, dude. We'll talk about it next.